Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021. Today, risk and return. Before I do that, the midterm exam answers will be available late tonight. I still had three students who had Office of the Dean of Students accommodation that I had to give the exams, makeup exams to. Those will be finished this evening by 9 o'clock, and then I can open up the answers for the exam. Also, if you have, go through the answers, and if you still have questions, I'll have a Zoom session tomorrow. Well, if Zoom is working tomorrow, I'll have a Zoom session tomorrow night from 6:30 to 7:30 if you want to ask some questions there. And then you can also ask some in the office hours on Wednesday. Now, as far as your score goes, the old rule that I have with an exam like this is that if more than 75% of students miss a question, then I throw that question out. And so on this one, there were two definitely that'll be thrown out. So that means that your score, when it's finalized in later this week, will be 5 points higher than what you see right now. Now, if you don't want those points, just send me an email message and I'll, you know, I won't give them to you. Okay. Also, there's another one that's kind of dodgy. It was like a high percentage missed it, but it wasn't anywhere near 75%. But I'm not sure. I may throw that one out too. So that'd be, it'd be 7.5 points instead of 5 points. I'm sure you would prefer the 5 points to the 7.5. And I don't want to disappoint you, but it does look like there was one more that was not very good performance on it. So anyway, one way or the other, your answer key will be, the answers will be available for you to see tonight. And if you want to ask some more questions, I'll just have an open Zoom session tomorrow night, provided Zoom is working by tomorrow. Anyway, where was I? Okay. Today is risk and return. I wanted to do a few last matters with bonds, go through bond prices, one more pricing and yields, one more time. What I would ask you as far as a technical question goes on a quiz or on the final exam, and show you the calculator keystrokes one more time to do that, and then go into some more details about bonds in general. Some technical stuff about bonds, not in general, but technical stuff. Now, the first things first. For a bond, I would either give you the yield to maturity, the YTM, and have you find the price, or I would give you the price and I'd have you find the yield to maturity. That would be the technical question I would ask. Now, if you got the keystrokes down, this is just a matter of putting them in and getting your answer. You got to remember a couple of little twists here. Let me start with a company, ANT. It's had a 4.0% coupon bond, matures in 2030. Now, to do this, we're going to say Apps Finance TVM Solver. Now, the term of the bond is 2030 minus 2021. Whoops. But you have to remember to multiply that by 2, because there will be twice as many payments as there are years, because the coupon is paid semi-annually. The next thing, the I percent is yield. In this first problem, I know the yield. The yield to maturity is 3.8%. Again, somewhere in your notes, I percent is yield, not coupon, it's yield. However, that is going to be divided into two calculations a year. So if I know the yield, I divide by two. Again, if I know the yield, I divide by two. If I don't know the yield, I times by two when I get it. Again, if I know the yield, I divide by two. If I don't know the yield, I times by two after I calculate it. That's the only thing where you could where you might make a mistake. You're most likely to. Now, the PV is the price value. Negative in this case, what is it? Oh, I don't know it. Whoops. Better leave that alone. Payment. The coupon, 0.04, times, it's always expressed as a percent of face. Face is always 1,000. Now, divide the coupon in two, because it will, that $40 a year will be in two installments of $20 each. Now, the FV for bonds, it is always $1,000 at the end. The future value, the face value, is $1,000 at the end. Make sure 1-1 end, and then go back up here to the present value, price value. Put it over there. Negative, in this case, well, I don't have to do that. I just have to say alpha solve, sorry. Alpha solve, $1,015.12. That's the price of the bond. Now, if I were to say, quote the bond, you would write 101.51. You would say 101.51. You would write 101.51. And the way you would say it is 101.51 on the 100, or 101.51. Don't put a dollar sign on it, for God's sake, because that's not a dollar amount. That's a tenth of the money. You quote it that way with a dollar on it, and you're going to have to owe about $900. Okay? So the quote is 101.51 on the 100. The price is $1,015.12. That's all there is to it. I mean, these. Notice something here. The coupon is more than what the market says it needs to be. The market says, you need to pay us 3.8%. Oh, but you're paying us 4%, so we're going to drive that bond up to a premium to par. To a premium to par. Now, we go to this next one. DVL 5.5% 2034s. DVL 5.5% 2034. We've got a price of $978.15. So we're going to go up here to the top, and we're going to open the, and we want to find the yield to maturity. We go up to the top, and in this case, it's going to be 20, 34, is that right? Yeah. Less the current year, 2021. So in other words, it's got 13 years left, and again, don't forget to times by two. I'm going to say one quick thing again here. It kind of looks trivial when I do these calculations. It really is a smart idea to let the calculator do calculations. That's why it's called a calculator. And don't think, well, I can do that in my head. You would be surprised. By the time you get to my age, you won't even be able to find your own butt using both hands in a roadmap. So don't think that you're calculating, you're a calculator genius. Just let the calculator do these things, for God's sake. It's one place where you can just, you don't need to take the risk of making a mistake. Don't. Now, leave the I percent alone. Now, the price value, here we have the price. It's negative 978. 15. Notice something. This bond is selling at a discount to par. So the market is not happy with this bond. That coupon sucks. Anyway, going down to the payment. Okay, the coupon here is 0.055 times 1,000, and again, divided by 2. You put that in your notes. Always divide by 2 on the PMT. On a quiz or an exam, I'm not going to tell you coupons are semi-annual. They are. I'm not going to tell you that you're good looking. You are. Okay, that was stretching it, but you know what I mean. You understand. Now go down. Everything else is fine. Now go back up here. Here we want the yield to maturity, the YTM. So we're going to say, put it up there, alpha, solve. Here's where you can make your big mistake. You can say, well, there we go, 2.87%. I'll put that down. There's my answer. No. You don't know the yield to maturity. So when you calculate it, and if you calculate it, you times by 2. The actual answer is 5.74%. And also notice that, yes, indeed, the market wants 5.74%. The company's paying only 5.5%. That's why it's selling at a discount to par. Like we said, it is just not, it's disappointing the market. So sellers sell it off until the price becomes low enough that it's worth it to buy it at the bad coupon. You'll buy it, but you want that price to go down to the point where that it's worth it for that crummy coupon. That is all there is really to what I would expect for you to be able to do on a quiz or a final as far as the technical detail goes. It's not really complicated much at all, as long as you know the calculator keystrokes. Taking it out of this, well, let me leave this here for just a minute. That the term of a bond is how long it has left. There are some bonds out there that are callable. Now, what that means is that there is a year when the company can pay off the debt early. See this bond, this DVL, it's due in 2034. So the company has to pay it off in 2034. What would happen if the company could pay it off anytime after 2027? Well, it would do that if it could sell these bonds reissue at 4.8%. This is called, if a company is allowed to do that in the bond covenants, it's referred to as a callable bond. So sometimes you'll see, what is the yield to call? Well, all you do that one is just instead of 2034 minus 2021, you do 2027, whatever the open call year is. Now, when you get a home loan on a mortgage bond, you have a call provision usually. You can actually pay off the loan early if you can refinance at a lower rate. Like, for example, if you, sir, had a home loan with 30 years and you got it at, let's say, 5%. Well, let's say that in 10 years, interest rates are such that you can get a mortgage for 4.5%. What you would do is refi. You would just pay off that loan by borrowing the balance and starting over again. That's a call provision. That's a call. Now, interestingly, that's the most common kind of call. There's another twist where the lender gets to call. Suppose that interest rates went up to 7%. Well, this company's, Boy, I'm glad we issued that at 5.5% a few years ago. Well, if the lenders have a call provision, they could actually force the call, make you pay off the loan right away, and refinance at the higher rate. Well, you're thinking to yourself, what bastard would do that? Well, in fact, almost every home loan has a lender call hidden in it. Yes? Watch this. Let's say you, sir, you have a happy mortgage on a home, you've lived a good life, and then you lose your job. You can't find any more jobs because artificial intelligence does everything you could possibly ever have known how to do. Well, you miss a loan payment. Well, I'll catch up with it. You miss another one. And then the lending institution sends you a letter. And they use a term called an acceleration clause. That's their call provision. They have just called in the loan. They're not going to take your home away from you because you didn't make the payments. They're going to take your home away from you because they called in the whole loan and you didn't pay it. That is the acceleration clause. Almost every loan that you've got has an acceleration clause hidden in it. If you don't make the payments, you're not going to lose the asset because you didn't make the payments. It will be most likely because the lender exercised the acceleration clause and said, you must pay the whole amount of the loan immediately. And then that's what they take you to court on. You didn't pay off the loan when we exercised our acceleration clause, when we called in the loan. You see what I mean? It doesn't look like it's a very normal thing to happen, but in fact, it's like a time bomb in every loan that you've got, your car loan, your home loan. I am trying to remember. I actually knew this at one time, and I can't remember what I said. I'm not sure, but I think student loans have an acceleration clause too. And I mean, that's a bear. Because, I mean, you say you hit a rough spot, a couple of months. Well, once they've exercised the acceleration clause, it's over. The only thing you could do is to get a new loan to pay off the old one. But you're going to get a new loan at a much higher interest rate because you're a higher risk now. Wow, yeah, it can happen. Now, there are other provisions and all kinds of weird-ass loans, but let me give you one that's an oddball. By the way, a call provision. If I am a lender and you have a call provision on me, then I am going to charge you a higher interest rate, a higher coupon rate, because you can do something that would hurt me. You could call in the loan and refi at a lower rate. I get my money back, and all I can do is invest it at a lower rate. So I'm going to charge you a premium for that risk of the call. Now, the other thing that is going to possibly be a real pain in the butt is what's called convertibility, a convertible bond. Here's how it works. I borrowed money. On a bond. It's got 20 years left. And you were the lender. I hit a bad spot. I can't pay the interest. Now, you know what will happen. If I can't pay the interest, I'm in default in the bond. So remember what a bondholder can do? If I don't pay the interest, you can shoot my dog. You can sell my family Bible on Craigslist. And you can make my parents wear furry costumes. It's that bad. But then you say, oh, wait. See, I owe you that money. I can't pay you, and you're about to take me into bank, liquidate my corporation. I say, oh, we have a provision here. It's called the convertibility clause in our indenture agreement. it allows me to turn your bond into stock. So now you're not the lender. You're just another shareholder. Now, if you think about it, a company that can't pay its bills, how valuable is that stock going to be? It's going to be between SH and IT in value. So in other words, I've got you. I screwed you over because I've turned you into one of my buddies. Okay? And go ahead.
Do they all have that clause? No.
That's the point, is a convertibility clause is a nasty. Now, you get those at a low price because the yields are very high because they're risky as heck. I mean, if I'm going to lend you money and you can convert on me, I'm going to make you pay a coupon that hurts like hell because of that possibility. Now, interestingly, the switch of that is some bonds have a convertibility provision in the lender's favor. Suppose that I am paying my coupons to you, I'm happy, I'm okay, company's doing great, the sky's the limit, and you say, oh, wait a minute, I am now in my convertibility window. I want to turn my bond into stock. I don't want a fixed payment. I want to get in on the action. So you turn, I was expecting to just make this fixed payment to you over and over again. Now I have to put up with you. You moved in with me. You used to be just a good friend of mine. Now there your ass is on my couch. And leave my refrigerator alone, man. Okay? You understand, the convertibility provision is a nasty. Whichever side has it. You know what? I haven't checked this out, but I know a friend of mine who's an IB, investment banking person. He said that he's seen bonds that have both sides. Convertibility was on both sides. So in other words, the company could convert if it couldn't pay the coupons, but the lenders could convert if the company did really well. So it was sort of like they held a knife at each other's throat and all that. Okay, now, let me take it out of this realm. Let me put it into the... story of other types of bonds out there. And there are all kinds of weird bonds. And bonds, the ones that I do here are simple. And a lot of bonds are really simple. But there are stories of bonds and famous types of bonds. And I could tell you, if you took a class in fixed income securities, I could tell you one wild story from my consulting days. It had to do with $6.6 billion that did exist, but it didn't exist. But anyway, let me cover a couple of quick ones with you. One thing is bonds that are denominated in a currency other than that of the company's own country. A foreign bond is a bond that is denominated in the currency of a country other than the company's country. So in other words, I could actually issue a bond that paid its coupons and its face value in, let's say, euro instead of dollars. Now, why would I do that? Well, I might want to just attract capital from European investors. I might be thinking of doing some kind of thing in Europe, so I'm going to entice investors to invest in this European operation of an American company. Now, another one. And this one, a lot of close to home stuff. I don't know if you recall. I teach and I do a business in the Republic of Panama, and they have their own currency. It's called the Balboa. Really, the coins are beautiful. A dollar coin is like silver and gold, really pretty. But I was down there, as a matter of fact, when the deal came down. If you go to any place in Panama, to a restaurant, to a grocery store, to a nightclub, whatever, you can use a Balboa or you can use a dollar. They're fine with either one because the two currencies are locked, pegged in a lock, one for one, permanently, one for one. So in other words, I mean, I can use Balboas, but they're kind of a pain in the butt carrying around all those coins, so I can just give a dollar, sure, anyone will have it. Street vendor, I gave him a 20, and he was didn't even bat an eye. That's how it works down there. But here's the upshot of it. Panama is a country on the move. It's just amazing. And there are other countries are too, but that's just awesome what's going on there. And they have to expand their airport. Insanely large expansion. So they needed $775 million to do it. So what did they do? They issued a $775 million bond. Dollar, not Balboa bond, a dollar bond. So it will pay the coupon, I think it was like 5%, something like that, in dollars, and it will pay the face value off in dollars. Now, why would Panama want to issue a bond that the lenders would get their money in dollars and they would give Panama dollars instead of Balboas? Balboas are nowhere in it, yeah. They can't because they're locked to the dollar. They can't move, yeah. You better believe it. They wanted the Chinese, the Saudis, and the Russians. Because the Chinese, the Saudis, the Russians, the Europeans, the Japanese, they have trillions and trillions of American dollars in their central banks. How could they have gotten them? That's that story I told you. You buy anything from China, and those dollars become your export. They import the toaster to you. You export the dollars to the People's Bank. The merchant never sees any dollars. The $10 goes to the People's Bank of China, and then the People's Bank of China gives the merchant the equivalent in the Chinese currency, the yuan. That was how China cheated for 25 years. A little less than that. All they did was they gave their merchants more Chinese yuan than the dollars were really worth, which meant that the Chinese merchants could charge fewer dollars and get back enough yuan to be happy. That was their game. How big was the cheat? Their prices were about 30% of what they should have been. But the Chinese were subsidizing the yuan by getting dollars and giving the Chinese merchants more yuan than they should have. And hence why there's a hidden hyperinflation happening in China. And there's another thing, too, that impacts you very big within the next year or two. But I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, yeah, see, so, I mean, Panama, they wanted American dollars because they use American dollars. It's brilliant. I've been trying to get these West African countries to look at the possibility of lock pegging so that they can get this too. Bring in the Chinese, bring in the Saudis, bring in the Russians, the Japanese. We're no longer in these countries. We're finding me time. And all the rest of the world is now being bought up by people who aren't exactly our friends. But that's your problem, not mine. But there's another one, okay? So these foreign bonds are everywhere. By the way, do any of you know, but have you been taught the term for an American dollar in the reserve, foreign reserves of another country, what those are called? Okay, they're called euro dollars. That's what a euro dollar is. It's an American dollar in a central bank of another country because we gave that other country our dollars to get their cheap stuff, their cheap toasters, their cheap oil, their cheap cars, their cheap vodka, whatever. Those are euro dollars, and there are trillions. So that whole idea, well, China is going to get rid of all of its American dollars. No, they aren't. They're not even, they're scared to death if they a dollar collapsed. That would be the collapse of the People's Bank of China, because the balance sheet of the People's Bank of China is nothing but a list of dollars. $10 trillion or something like that. Anyway. So that's that thing. Now, I don't want to go too deeply into it, but one of my specialties here, and I'll be doing a special topics course, is cryptocurrencies. And one thing, just as a side note, first of all, crypto is now getting into the bond world, where you can, you want to sell a house, and you are willing to sell it on your own with a smart contract for, let's say, 30 ETH. That's an Ethereum coin. That would be about $100,000. So you put up a crypto contract, a smart contract, and you post that you will transact with someone who pays 30 ETH. Well, you get a buyer. The buyer simply commits on the block to the 30, so that 30 ETH goes to you instantly. You don't say yes. It's just instant. The block representing the asset then goes to the one who deposited the 30 ETH. You then get the 30 ETH into your wallet, into your crypto wallet, and the house belongs to them. That's all there is to it. There's no bank. There's no financial institution. It's just a smart contract. We call this world DeFi, D-E-F-I, decentralized finance. Here's where it could cause a war. One of these DeFi cryptos, now, and when you hear a crypto coin, cryptocurrency, you think of Bitcoin, Doge. Most of the crypto coins have a specialized use. Like, for example, here's one, Stellar Lumens. Stellar is the blockchain, the company. Lumens is the name of their cryptocurrency. Here's how it works. You are a Chinese merchant. I am an American buyer of Chinese goods to sell here. You quote me in lumens, and I transfer in lumens in a smart contract. As soon as my lumens hit your account, boom, I now own that shipment of goods. You ship it, block closes. No middlemen, no dollars and yuan. An international, completely assetless, there's no backing, currency called a lumen. And that's all there is to it. China is no longer in control of America. America is no longer beholden. The world is now, the governments no longer have control of international trade. And there's no one who does, because blockchains have no master. They're just something in the ether, hence the Ethereum protocol. And that is what could cause China to blow up. It's already going all over the world, swinging its authoritarian fists in Hong Kong, threatening Taiwan with a war, which very well could involve you, but send me postcards, pics, or it didn't happen, okay? No, seriously, noob, you would be good because you're big. You'll stand up. Oh, that's right. Oh, that's right. Well, hell, they could recall you. Yeah, seriously, years ago, I got a letter saying that my MOS still could be called back by the commander-in-chief. I just, I didn't see that letter. Okay, look. Here's the thing, though. You understand that that's on Taiwan. There are blockchains and maybe Lumen blockchains. China is screaming that it's going to ban current cryptocurrencies. No, it's not, but it knows that the more it feeds that monster, the more it is ending its reign on Earth. North Korea, the same thing. You see, they think they're geniuses using slave labor to gather coins, just like China's doing. They may be signaling their own doom by doing that. By the way, lumens have another cool thing too. They can hard fork, custom hard forks. So in other words, I could make a cryptocurrency for ISU, a crypto Redbird coin, and then we pay for everything in crypto. We keep a crypto wallet, a Reggie Redbird crypto. God, never mind. Anyway, you know what I mean. But this is the world, and it's your world, and it's so freaking cool, it's ridiculous. And it's also hilarious, too, because the authoritarians and all the government control freaks, they're going to say, well, we'll stop this. No, you won't. Anyway, so there's that. Now, let me give you another kind of bond. Commodity bonds. Now, commodity bonds are bonds that are denominated in some commodity. It could be a grain. Coupon is paid in bushels of corn or something like that. The face value is in coffee beans or pork bellies or whatever the hell. Seriously, I mean, you can have a bond that is in anything. So, and also, I mean, crypto bonds are very much coming on. I mean, I can provide liquidity to the vast Ethereum, and that becomes the basis for borrowing in crypto. I bought her house for 30 ETH. I might very well have issued a crypto bond. It pays in a smart contract in ETH. Isn't that weird? I mean, this is so cool, but you got to get involved in it. Don't be stupid. There are scams out there. Stick with something that's very well known, like a Coinbase or a MetaMask or something like that. And don't buy stupid currencies, like I did with Doge. But by the way, another thing, smart contracts, like, for example, life insurance. Suppose that you have term life insurance. 5 years it lasts, and it's $100,000 if it pays. So I'm the insurance company. You are the insured. I commit crypto in the amount of 100, let's say 30 ETH. You make your payments every, say, 6 months. So in other words, the smart contract just simply collects you to keep the block in place. And if you die during that period, well, that 30 ETH I committed goes to your family as the claimants of the block. If you live, then I just keep all of those 30s, which I was taking anyway, and then I retract my 30 ETH that began it, and I've also got the premiums you paid, and the contract simply, the block simply closes. The hash is done. That's all there is. And no, there is not a central life insurance company. There is not. You could have one. They could sponsor a blockchain. But you don't have to. That's what we mean by DeFi, decentralizing finance. We can also DeFi contracts. There's a Graphit company, Graphit protocol, that actually matches service providers with service needers. You need an electrician. The smart contract is there. You put the money, commit the current crypto into it, and then the service company claims that side of the hashtag, and then they do the service, and then the cryptocurrency goes over to you, goes over to the service provider. Getting away from that, let me go on. Commodity bonds. There is one kind that used to be very common. Matter of fact, it was the vast majority of all the bonds issued on Earth. But there was a special example of it that I'll share with you. World War II. I mean, that was a hell of a thing. I mean, the last great generation and all of that, we took on evil in two completely separate theaters, and we kicked the filthy Nazis back down to hell. Someone forgot to lock the doors because they're sneaking back up. We blew away the Japanese monsters of the Imperial Army. We did it. But, of course, we did something along the way that wasn't so cool. In order to get rid of that cancer that was sweeping the earth, we had to level the earth. We turned Europe into a rubble field. Entire cities were nothing but blocks and parts of buildings. Japan, Are you kidding me? We turned two whole cities, two whole industrial cities, and all of their workers, and all their kids, into literally glass with nuclear bombs. And we had to fix it. You know why we had to fix it? We had to fix it, what we'd done? Because there were the communists, the Soviets, our former allies. They were now in the mood to move across the world and stick their dirty communism in every place they could. See the Americans, how bad they are? We'll save you with our communism. Sure they will. About that. How are you going to do this, though? Okay. Well, we needed money. We needed an insane amount of money to rebuild Europe, to rebuild Japan. For Europe, there was a, I believe it was a politician named Senator Marshall who said, look, we're just going to have to get a plan together, put back up all those buildings, all those streets, all those bridges, all those highways, all those railroads, all the factories, the schools, the apartments. We're just going to have to rebuild the whole damn place. France, Italy, Germany, the Netherlands, any place we bombed down to stones, we're going to have to build it back up, and that's going to cost a hellacious amount of money. This was the Marshall Plan. Okay, here's how it worked. We had to have the money to do this, so the United States government issued special bonds to raise the money to do this. But what we want to do was we want to make sure that those bonds would sell. Well, we didn't want any, well, I don't know whether I want to buy a bond. We made the bonds so that they paid off the coupon and the face value in gold, ounces of gold. They were gold bonds, literally gold bonds. And, well, those things sold like hotcakes, and we raised the money, and we rebuilt the Europe that you see today. Now, there are some places, if you have a chance, if you go to the bad places in some cities in Germany and other places, and you'll still see the rubble. And you'll realize, you look this way, oh, my God, it's beautiful. Oh, holy cow. I mean, we rebuilt the whole continent. And the French still hate our guts. But at least this kept the dirty Union of Soviet Socialist Republics from sticking its hairy toe in too far into Europe's western side. We got it done. We did the same for Japan, too. Okay, but with the Marshall Plan, those gold bonds, here was the problem. Well, obviously, you know, who bought these gold war bonds, post-war bonds, Marshall Plan bonds? Well, it would obviously be Americans, right? Yeah, we're going to help. No. Those bonds were actually bought by ancient, wealthy, powerful European families and trusts and corporations. They lent us the money to rebuild their countries, and then they got that back in our gold. We literally almost wiped out Fort Knox paying off those face values, because those face values were in gold, not in dollars that we could print, just a fake paying off like we did with the Americans who bought war bonds. Yeah, the Americans, the mom and dad who bought the war bonds to fight back the evils, we printed the money and caused inflation that made those bonds worth very little to our own American citizens. But those gold families over there in Europe, oh yeah, they made a fortune off that gold because, of course, price of gold started to skyrocket as we stocked out of our gold, and they put it away in hidden places in the wealthy, powerful, dark families of Sweden and Austria and Germany and Italy and France. Yeah, we wiped ourselves out. Lol. Anyway, so that's a gold bond. Now, let me be clear about this, though. I said all bonds, U.S. bonds, were actually commodity bonds. Not all of them, but almost all were. You see, before 1964, any dollar bill could be turned into silver. That's why at the top of the dollar bills, it said silver certificate, because they were perfectly convertible. Every dollar was perfectly convertible into silver. And therefore, any bond that was denominated in dollars was actually denominated in silver, because the dollars were silver. How did you get silver out of a dollar? You just took it to the bank and they give you 4 silver quarters. Quarters were made of silver. So a dollar literally was nothing but a representation of silver discs. And so, in fact, all of our bonds that were issued back before 1964 were commodity bonds. They were silver. They weren't backed by silver. They were paid off in silver. So that was a very strange time. It's, to this day, I can't get used to coins, quarters that don't make that beautiful ringing sound of silver when they hit against each other. You've never seen that, but that was just the way it always was. Oh, you would have thought the world was coming to an end when people started seeing those quarters that weren't silver and the dimes and everything else. But anyway, now, do understand that there are some other coins out there that are bonds out there that have weirdness in them, oddities, and there are even, it's a very complicated subject, but you can even consider some types of work agreements to be types of bonds that pay off in services. And that's something that you've seen in several cases around the world, where borrowing can actually be paid off in services of a company or a group or a person. Also, bonds that can be paid off in land are not completely unheard of. And so there are all kinds of different types of debt out there. It's its own world, and a lot of people don't want anything to do with it because it sounds so boring. But boy, when you tell stories about gold bonds. Now, very quickly, about a weird thing that happened in my consulting career. I got a call one day. It was in the 1990s. I had a little office on Olentangy River Road just outside of Columbus, and that was my consulting company. And I had a fellow call me. He was a player. He was sometimes a very good guy, sometimes he was a very bad guy. He got me into the world that nearly got me killed, but this was before that. He said, "Hey, Alan, I want you to talk to some people, some friends of mine. They're flying into Columbus tomorrow, and I'm going to talk to them, but I can't do anything for them, but you might be able to." Okay? Never thought anything about it. So at 11 o'clock, here they come into my office, an elderly couple. Sweet, wonderful, and they were just lovely people. Old man, old woman. The old woman was carrying a big wooden box, and she put it down on the table. She opened it up, and there it was in there, 10 of them. And I had seen a picture of one of them in my life. It was a gold bond. It was literally a gold bond, and there were 10 of them. At the then price of gold, they were paid off in ounces of gold. It was about $6.6 billion. And I thought, this has got to be a fake. You know, but they were such a nice old Jewish couple. I mean, I loved them to death. They were so sweet. And so I thought, all right, I know this has got to be a joke. And so I called a friend of mine in Texas. He was a diamond broker, and he knew a lot about a lot of things like this. And I told him, he said, "Oh, you're talking to so-and-so. You know these people?" "Oh, yeah, everyone knows them." "No, everyone doesn't. I didn't know them." I said, "So these are fake?" He said, "Oh, no, those are real." I said, "Okay, so these are fake." "No, those are real." "What? They want me to find, to cash, they want." He said, "You can't. They were canceled. They never redeemed them." "Oh, how? Why?" "Because they were, first of all, they bought these gold bonds, and then they were in the Soviet Union for many years, and they were very much oppressed there, as Jewish communities were. And when they finally escaped, they escaped with their box and a lot of other of their belongings. But by that time, those bonds were no longer redeemable. They're gone. Are you kidding me? These are real? Yeah. And I said, well, what can we do? He said, oh, I got a guy. He could, just as a historical document thing, he'd buy them for $50,000. But they've already been told this. There you go. And I can attest, yes, there really were gold bonds. And they paid in ounces of gold. So anyway, let that be a lesson to you. Cash your bonds when they mature, for God's sake. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.